A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on December 8, 1991, in the series God With Us, entitled In the Care of the Community. The scripture readings are Isaiah 11, verses 1 through 9, and Revelation 21, verses 1 through 4. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
The Advent season is a season of waiting, and waiting is a familiar biblical word. The word behind wait in the Hebrew is a word that means more than patient resignation to a situation. It means rather an expectation and anticipation. Wait on the Lord. Wait on the Lord not simply in a kind of passivity that is hopeless, but wait on the Lord with an expectation that is full of hope. The Advent season is a season in which we wait with anticipation. To wait on the Lord is to trust that what is not all there is or will be, but that God will make some other move. There will be something more. As biblical people, we are conditioned to believe God created the heavens and the earth, and that God is engaged in the course of history with us. Now, that doesn't give us a kind of Pollyanna view of history or life. The characterization of the biblical story would be far from that. There is, in the biblical story, a recognition and acknowledgement of the darkness, but the unique feature of the biblical story is that there is always in the darkness that anticipation of the breaking of the light. Someone has said, time heals all wounds. And some wag has said that time wounds all heals. And it is the nature of our human experience. But thank God that time heals wounds, because, not simply because the pain dulls, but because there is a grace operative in life. And as biblical people, we are people who have been traditioned to wait in the darkness without despair and futility, because somehow or other we are always anticipating the breaking forth of the light. That's the way it was with Isaiah. Last week I mentioned that familiar promise of Isaiah, that sign that God would give when King Ahaz didn't want to ask a sign. The enemy was on the border. Ahaz was only interested in getting into a political alliance with Assyria. But the prophet said, trust God. And the king said, not really. And he said, well, ask a sign. And the king said, well, no. And finally the prophet said, all right, God will give you a sign. There's a woman with child. She'll bear a son, and she'll call his name Emmanuel, which means God with us. And whenever you see that little rascal running around, little God with us, you know that that little child will be a sign to you of your unbelief. but of the reality of which that name speaks. Because even in our darkness, God is with us. Even in our crisis, God is able. And then as you go a little farther in Isaiah, as Bob mentioned, the end of the 10th chapter, the prophet sees the fall of the great Assyrian Empire that Ahaz would think, thought was his hope. And he uses the image of a fallen forest, of a forest with its trees felled. So the mighty have fallen. And then as the 11th chapter opens, he keeps with that image. Now you have a stump, the stump of Jesse. Jesse was David's father. The house of David had fallen. The kingdom was no more. The glory had departed. Only a stump. But lo and behold, from the stump, what happened? A little shoot. A shoot out of the stump of Jesse. And the prophet sees a future ruler who will be filled with the Spirit of God, and because filled with the Spirit of God, this ruler will judge not with what his eyes see or his ears hear, but he will be able to discern down to the truth of things. Golly sakes, with a presidential election only less than a year away, wouldn't it be nice to find a leader that could discern to the truth of things? Who would judge the cause of the poor and defend the humble and throw down the oppressor? Ah, the prophet sees this vision of this shoot, one little shoot, coming out of the old stump. This future king filled with the Spirit of God and under such a righteous rule. Why, he says, the lamb and the wolf will lie down together. The child will be able to play over the hole of a deadly serpent. And they'll not hurt or destroy in all my holy mountain. What a vision. Wishful thinking. Notice, it didn't come out of the luxuriousness of David's reign or the pomp of Solomon's day. It came when Judah didn't have a prayer. Or, as a matter of fact, I guess that's all they did have. All they had was a prayer. They weren't worth a nickel. And sometimes when you're not worth a nickel, it's a little easier to recognize that if there is to be any human transformation, it will have to be of God. Wishful thinking? Maybe. But some centuries later, there was a Zacharias and an Elizabeth who were told of the forthcoming birth of a son, John. And Zacharias praised God. Blessed be the Lord who has visited and redeemed his people. And in that same waiting community, there was a Mary who had an angel visitant. And the Mary responded in praise, "My soul magnifies the Lord." And there was old Simeon, and he came in the temple, and he took this child, Jesus, in his arms, and he said, "Lord, now let your servant depart in peace. My eyes have seen your salvation." They said, "Hey, that little shoot out of old Jesse's stump has become this child of Mary's womb, the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, is the way John put it. And the New Testament church was formed on the conviction that the God who was with Judah when Ahaz was king and Isaiah was prophet, the God who was with Judah when a woman named her little boy God with us, that God was with God's people now in a fullness never before known, in a powerful presence, in the presence of Jesus, so that that New Testament community wrote of him. Matthew said, this was Emmanuel. This was what that earlier little child could only be a pointer toward. And Paul said, to look into the face of this one is to see into the heart of God. This one who could say, when you've seen me, you've seen the Father. But you know, nothing changed. And the old world just keeps reeling on from one disaster to another. Isaiah said, someone's coming. Matthew said, someone's here. But the tragedy and the suffering and all that's wrong with the human situation continued on apace. I stood in Rome recently and saw the ruins of the Colosseum where they made sport of those early Christians who believed that Jesus was the sprout out of Jesse's stump, the Messiah, the Anointed One, God's King. I went down into the bowels of the earth and coursed through the catacombs where the early Christians lighted their candles and said Mass and buried their dead out of sight from the persecuting power of Roman authority. And yesterday was December 7th, and we remembered the horror of 50 years ago, at least some of us did. And the newscast ended last evening with the suggestion that now that Japan is no longer so dependent upon U.S. defense, world hostilities have fallen to such a level that there's not such a threat anymore, that maybe that trade and economic problem won't be so easily worked out. And I thought to myself, doesn't it ever change? There's one thing to be bitten by zeros, but what about Hondas and Mitsubishis? I don't know if I want to do that again, do you? A world seeming never to move beyond the darkness. 2 years ago, celebrating the fall of the wall and all of those wonderful things, and our world in ferment, but yet a world still so dangerous. So that the recession and the economic situation brings out the survival instincts of people and brings out the beast in us all. Seems like nothing changes. But you know, it's interesting that there is an exact parallel between the darkness of Isaiah's day and the confidence he had, God is with us. And the darkness of the first century under Roman persecution, the parallel seems to be precise. Because in the midst of that persecution, John was in exile for his faith on the Isle of Patmos, and on the Lord's day he was in the Spirit, and he saw this wonderful vision, this vision whose culmination I read a moment ago, this vision of a new heaven and a new earth, and of God with them being their God, God dwelling with God's people, God in full manifestation. The God who will come into the darkness of the human situation and will wipe away every tear and will bring an end to death and to crying and to pain, and all of the former things will pass away. You see, God's people are not a Pollyanna people, are not a whitewash people. They are not a people who flourish in the light, but who are able to wait in the darkness in the confidence that the light will yet dawn. The posture of the Old Testament prophet, the posture of the New Testament believer under persecution, the posture of those people down through 20 centuries who have trusted God in spite of the situation. Wishful thinking, empty fantasy, escapism. Well, there are those who say that religious types like us are simply weak people that cannot face the harsh reality of life. Maybe so. Maybe so. But maybe, just maybe, what we have experienced points to a deeper reality. Maybe it is not a case where we just huddle together on this star stuff called Earth, spinning wildly through space, holding hands, blowing on the embers, trying to create a little more light and warmth before we move off into the icy darkness of the cosmic winter. Maybe Isaiah was right, and what the child signified was true. Maybe Matthew was right when he connected the Word made flesh, Jesus, with Emmanuel, God with us in Jesus. Maybe John on the Isle of Patmos had a vision that was true, that in the midst of persecution, God's presence was yet known. And because of that confidence, God with us, there was the ability to hope in the dawning of a new day. Our experience would be that it is in community that we experience the presence of God. When you hold me in your arms, I know God's presence. And when I hold you in my arms, you know God's presence. And when we embrace each other, we become conscious of a larger embrace. And in that mutual embrace, experience someone more, something more. when your tears well up because of my hurt, or when you break into a belly laugh celebrating my joy, when we meet one another, and when we hold one another's hands, we know that the incarnation was not once for all, but once for all and ongoing. That we are the extension of the incarnation, that the Word continues to become flesh as we are intimately connected, brothers and sisters together, caring one for another, believing that that care is a sign of what is ultimately true, that at the core of things is love and grace, for God is love and full of grace. In community, we know God with us, not to the exclusion of the rest. God knows there has been too much ghetto mentality in the church, our kind, our clan, our denomination. And God knows the world is threatened by competing religions that will not learn to live in peace with one another. No, not that kind of huddling together, but the embrace of one another that gives us a sense of God, the God who would embrace all humankind and make us a sign of God's presence in this world and the instrument by which God may touch the world beyond us. God with us in community. When you hold my hand, it is not that all is light and neat and tidy, but neither are we waiting some cosmic accident, but in the darkness, holding each other, we wait for the light. And the light will break upon us. God promises. Thank God.